Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so then, Chudamani's question from the page 6. You may quote Shastra as evidence, but it's important to see what the underlying principle is, right? Which is the true principle, but the point is here, the direct meaning he was unable to actually deal with. So therefore, he's trying to go to, you know, what's the inner meaning or the hidden meaning, because the direct meaning was obvious that, you know, it has to be something else, so... Vaishnava Das Babaji. The misfortune of low birth results from Prarabdha Karma. Oh no, can a defect of low birth be removed without taking another birth? The misfortune of low birth results from Prarabdha Karma. Such reactions are eliminated by chanting of Harinama. The Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.44 declares, merely by hearing Harinama only once, even Chandalas, men of the lowest caste, are freed from all material contamination. So just by hearing it, they're freed. It doesn't mean they don't have all their material mentality. So that's why they continue doing their activities. But when you go down the street with Harinam, whoever hears it, they're freed from all material contamination. Right? But they don't know that, so they just go on doing their regular stuff. You know? Furthermore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 333.7, it is stated, oh, how glorious are those they whose tongues are chanting Harinam. Even if born in the families of dog-eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant Harinama must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting Harinam, they must have bathed at the holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Right, so in other words, nothing's been left out. They've done everything. And so now having done everything, now they are able to appreciate the holy name. It's not that because you've done those things, that's why you can chant the holy name. It's just that you've done everything possible and nothing else actually gives anything. Because you take bath, you do all the things, have all the etiquettes, the Aryans, still you're in the material world and still there's suffering. So now it's like, what else is left, right? So one will take up Harinam. Plus, you can also say, as they have the pious credit, that they can appreciate the finer points when they associate with devotees. But in other words, it won't cause. Let's say I take some milk, right? I boil it. I bring it to the proper temperature, you know, just the, you know, you can stick your finger in it, you know, and it, and you know, it's just perfect like that. Will it make yogurt? No, but the conditions are perfect. Now, but if I bring a drop of yogurt, then it becomes yogurt, yeah. Right? But even if the conditions aren't ideal, I put the yogurt, it's slow, you know? But if it's ideal, so in other words, the effect is there when one associates with devotees. But now if one has all the pious credit, one's doing things, one's behaving properly, then it's just so much quicker. Right? But it's not that these things are the cause. Otherwise, then karma is the cause of bhakti. Right? But bhakti is beyond all this. It's independent.
Is it absolutely necessary that one has done everything before?
Well, if one hasn't done everything, then there's the idea that, well, if I had done that, then I would have materially enjoyed. So the point is you've done all the different things, so you're convinced there's nothing, right? That was Yayati's point, is that he took his son's youth and for 1,000 years, you know, just engaged himself, engaged the senses to the maximum according to Shastra. Mm-hmm. And then having done that for 1,000 years, then his conclusion was, there is no satisfaction in the material world. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what you're trying to come to. Mm-hmm. There is no satisfaction here. Right? Because otherwise, then you think, well, if I'd done this, or if I'd done that, then I would have enjoyed. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But the idea is that those things aren't going to, it's not going to happen. Does that make sense?
So people who come in contact with the devotees who haven't done everything, they put, they're the ones who kind of just...
They may not take it seriously. Yeah. But at the same time, the power of association is so much that the benefit of all those things are automatically accrued. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So you've done those things, then, like this. This is more for those people that say, how can this happen? So you say they do that. Just like, well, how is it, you know, Radha and Krishna are together, this is not proper. No, but they're actually married, you know, because they're the internal potency and the Supreme Lord himself. So it's just a pastime. Oh, okay, then it's okay. You know what I'm saying? So these kind of things are for that.
Okay.
Because actually, just by associating with devotees, then it's there. You know, does that make sense? The tendency is someone's done all that, they take it more seriously.
Yeah.
That's all. Chudamani, in that case, why cannot a Chandala who is chanting Harinam perform yajna, fire sacrifice? Vaishnav Das Babaji. Right? You see how they're working, is that they're not just, oh, that's stupid, you know, you can't do that, he's a this, and, you know, like that. They're thinking, so, okay, if that's your premise, and he's purified of everything, he's done everything, so why can't he do yajna? You know, because in any ways, it's not that they say it and you have to oppose it like this. You can just take what they're saying and use it against them. Right? You know what I'm saying? Somebody goes to punch you, if you can somehow or another grab their arm and just pull it a little bit more, a few centimeters, they're off balance. And then you can pull them anywhere you want. You know? Does that make sense? It's just their own effort rather than they like this and then you hit like that. You know, it looks good if it's, you know, like Conan the Barbarian or something. But otherwise, it's just, you know, they do something, you just give them a push, you know? They come by with that and you just move out of the way and they fall over. You know, it's just that's the thing, is that they've done something and then you just take what they say. Okay, so then let's follow that. You know, because if I'm convinced that it's a bogus line, then if we follow it to its natural, you know, limit, it'll prove itself to be bogus. Right? But of course, you know, it's not bogus, so therefore he'll lose and Vaishnav Das will win. So it doesn't matter. So if they follow your path, you can explain it nicely. Because otherwise, if they oppose it, then you can't explain and they're this and no one gets in a proper discussion. You know, and then but he's just asking questions. Now, you've said something. Now, if he makes a statement, then you just do the same thing to him. Okay, so what do you mean by that? Or if that's there, then what about this? You know, so then he can complete, you know. So in other words, everybody gets to nicely explain their standpoint. But whichever one is correct, you know, if that's it'll prevail. Because the other one, by going down the path, will show, oh, hey, that doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? So it's more exacting, you know, more intelligent, but it requires more character to do. You know. That's you could say the weakness in it, you know, because it doesn't take any character to yell and scream and this and that and like that. For Vaishnav Das Babaji, for a person to be eligible to perform yajna, he must take birth as a brahmana. Brahmana must first receive the Gayatri mantra and brahminical thread. Such is a savitra initiation before he's allowed to perform the different Vedic rituals. Similarly, a chandala, although purified by chanting Harinam, must first be born into a Brahmin family before he's eligible to conduct yajna and other Vedic rituals, which are readily available to him by such a birth. However, the former Chandala, purified by chanting Hari Nam, can perform all the angas, limbs of bhakti, which are infinitely greater than yajnas. Right? So he's pointing out here is that, yes, because you're born into that family, you learn all those things very nice. It's not that it's being born there that's the qualification, it's the association. Right? Because for the yajna, then you see, it's like you have to be able to chant these mantras without making any mistake. Right? Now, you know, when you know, you're born in one of these families, you know, when your father's doing puja or when he's putting on tea like that, what is he doing? Taking his bath?
He's teaching you.
Right? Yes. Means you're learning, but he's not supposed to be a class, but he's just chanting mantras and doing his activity. So from a young age, you've already heard the mantras for years before you've actually gone to the school, so they're very familiar. Like, I remember when we first started Vedic mantras, no one had heard them. Mm. Right? So I remember we used to have to teach syllable by syllable. Mm. Because no one had heard them, it didn't make any sense. Right? But after the first group had learned, you know, which took forever, like that, then because the other groups had been hearing it, you know, for the last, you know, year or two, then for them you could do it word by word. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And then we find as you go with the generations, then sometimes you can even do two words at a time. Mm-hmm. Because they're so familiar with it, but they haven't learned it. But they've heard it, so it's not strange for them. Like that. So that's the advantage. You're taking birth there. Therefore, that cleanliness standard, how they dress, the mantras, the attitudes, you know, the lifestyle they'll live and just how they do things, you know. So you have to take a bath here, you can't do that, or you can't wear your clothes to eat, or different things. You learn all those things just by association. So that's why that is the advantage of being born in the family, right? But as he's pointing it out, is that therefore, but all the angas of bhakti, he can perform all those because doing the Vedic yajna isn't specifically part, right? There's the pancharatrik yajnas that are done with the puja. But generally who would be doing the puja, you know, as a full-time, would be those who have that brahminical nature, right? So then they would be doing it. It'd work out. But the others, they don't need to do it. They're chanting the holy name. They're seeing the deities. They're doing kirtan. You know, so it doesn't really matter. You know, those who are qualified to do it, they do those things. Like when we go to, you know, the temples, the Goswami temples, we're not worried about, you know, well, I want to do artik or I want to dress the deity. No, we're happy they're doing it and we take darshan. We can sit down, do kirtan, you know, arrange for bhoga offerings, arrange for prasad. We can do everything. Does that make sense? So that's why it works like that. Because someone who's from that situation, if it's bona fide, they'll be better at it. Like just the practice. But as we can see, is that because it's greater, the angas of bhakti are greater than all the yajnas and all that, and he actually has the purification and all that, therefore, he technically could do them. But as we see, Vaishnav Das is going to point out, there is the element of social standing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? So in a society where you have qualified Brahmins, why they shouldn't do the puja? Right? We'll do the Hari Nam. Right? But when there's not, then we'll also do the puja. Does that make sense? You know, but if there's those who are qualified, let them do it. Because it anyway works like that. You know, everybody wants to do the this and that, makes a whole hullabaloo over it, but give it a few months and then it's back to those who are actually can do that on a regular basis, they'll be doing it. Does that make sense? You know, so as long as the mood is very dynamic, then yes, everybody wants to do it. I remember in the 70s in L.A. when they would do the, because you had 500 devotees there. So everybody wanted to be involved in the puja, right? You know, all the second initiates. So you had, you know, hundreds of them. So one person would, you know, do the preparation. Another would do the cooking. Another one would make the plate. Another one would carry the plate into the deity room. Another one would make the offering. Another one would come in, clean up. And another one would do the artik. That way they could get everybody engaged. But I'm sure if you go now, it's not like that. You know, it's like if they can find, you know, a few people that will have to do everything, they're lucky. Does that make sense? You know, so the whole point, if that enthusiasm is there, then yes, then you have everybody involved. But if not, it'll just naturally go down to those who that is their nature. they'll do puja all day, and the others, either, you know, how much they can do, they can fit into their other schedule, or whenever they feel, like, you know, nobody may want to do on a regular day, but when it comes to Janmashtami, then everybody wants to be involved. Right? Does that make sense? So it's like that, because you know it, then when it's a festival, you don't have something else, so you want to do. But if it's between doing that and what's the other activities you do, you'll do your other activities. That's just how it'll work. Does that make sense? So that's why then those who are naturally have that position, they would be doing it because the puja should be regular. Right? Does that make sense? But it means anybody who's a qualified Vaishnava can do. But as an occupation, you'll find only those who generally with brahminical nature can do. Or they become very advanced, so they're not engaged in an occupation. Right? So then, they just, that's what they do all day. Does that make sense? So it's either it's brahminical by conditioning, or it's brahminical by spiritual advancement. Okay. Yeah, no, somehow or another it's amazing how something like this can spread in every temple all over the world. They'll exactly do it in the same way, you know, like that. But you try to take something else, you know, that's standard and traditional, and, you know, you can go out there with battle axes and clubs for 20 years and still it's like, what's that? You know, it doesn't matter. Like that. Yeah, you know, we had I think it started the other day with some, you know, they're having some kid's birthday and the mom was there and that one, it was the time that she started the song and okay, so that's the way it goes. So,
yeah,
okay,
doing that now.
Yeah, so, hey, okay, cool. Yeah, so, it works, you know. Okay, Chudamani. This is a very strange siddhanta. One who is denied exercising an elementary right ends up having claim to such superior position. Right? Because he's looked at it as that, okay, he can't do these lower things that are more technical, but he can do the higher things, which is superior. So how does that work? What proofs can you put forward? Because he's trying to point out it's not necessarily a superior position. The Brahmins are the superior. That's why he can't do it. The Brahmins are superior. So therefore, the Vaishnavas, unless they're Brahmins, can't do that. He wants to put it the other way. So he's saying, this is weird, you know, isn't it? Because he's less qualified on one level, but he can do the higher qualification. Vaishnav Das Babaji. Human activities can be categorized under two headings. Vyavaharika, mundane, and paramartika, spiritual. There are instances where a person is spiritually advanced, but is not allowed to perform certain vyavaharika activities. For example, a person is born as a Muslim, but acquires the qualities of the sattva-guna, like a pure Brahmin. In fact, spiritually, he is a Brahmin, yet he is barred from the vyavaharika act of marrying a Brahmin bride. Chudamani, why is he not eligible? What will be his offense if he does? Right? So this is the fun thing is here. It's almost like he's arguing, you know, the Vaishnava side. But what he's trying to do is bring out, okay, you got that, okay, then this, and then you get down and so you don't have an answer anymore. Yeah. So then it says, so see, so therefore, like that. That's what he's trying to do. Because in synthesis means your understanding already covers theirs. Right? In other words, yours is broad, theirs is narrow. So the narrow one fits into the broad one. That's synthesis.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what you're trying to do. Vaishnava Das Babaji. If he violates social customs, one is guilty of vyavaharika dosh, secular impropriety, and members of society who take pride in their social position do not condone to such activities. That is why one should not perform them, even if he is spiritually qualified. Right? In other words, the others won't accept it. So that's why one doesn't do it. Right? Mm-hmm. Because they are basing it on Shastra. It's not like, well, the Malechas, they don't do this, so therefore, you know, we shouldn't do what's appropriate. You know, they won't like Hari Nam, you know, you know, it's like that. So therefore we don't do it. No, it's not. It's not like that. It's a matter of it's shastra. It means if there's some little minor things, okay, we do or don't do. You know, so it's like if you're in, you know, around the world, you know, you meet a couple, you shake their hand because that's the thing you do. Then you shake their hand. You know, it's not a big deal. You know, it's just considered a lower kind of respect because you're only using one hand. Right, you're supposed to use two hands. Of course, you could say that I'm using my hand and their hand, so it's two hands, so therefore it works out. You know, like that. You know, the Buddhist one, this. That's only one hand. That's something's wrong there. Something's missing.
Can I explain a little bit? Because Srila Prabhupada is an acharya, even other acharyas in the history, they are changing this.
There's no change. This is very, very important to understand. There's no change. Devotees love to throw it around. Prabhupada changed. Prabhupada didn't change anything. It's just a matter of how you apply the rule that's there. He said here, says, but even a person born as a Muslim, but acquires the qualities of the sattva gun, like a pure Brahmin. In fact, spiritually, he is a Brahmin. So spiritually, he is. But on the material platform, he may not be. Right, so that's why he wouldn't be involved in puja. Because before, when they said puja, they meant it's not house worship; it's temple worship. You know what I'm saying? Basically, it's just here, Vrindavan, Bombay does temple worship. All our other temples do home worship, like that. Elaborate home worship, but it's home worship. Everything changes. Everyone doing different things. The different standards that you do, the standards of cleanliness. Some come closer. They do it more, they're more seriously, like Hungary is more serious about it. But most places, it's just, what's the minimum that you can get by with, and then try to push it a little bit more. You know? Do we really have to do Achman? Do we have to do Achman so many times? Do we actually have to do that? You know, can't I wear my shoes? It's cold. Do I actually have to wear on stone cloth? Why can't, that's all you ever hear. If you have a pujari seminar, that's all you ever hear about. Is how can we get out of the rules that are there? Can't we just make it more simple? You know, even Malecha Nyama, can't I just wipe my nose on the things like that? You know, can't we take the buttons off, you know, like that? No, but the Malechas put the buttons on there. You know why there's buttons there? You have the button here, it just holds it together. But why are there so many buttons on these military uniforms? That's because they wipe their nose on their sleeve. So they put the buttons there, it looks good, and no one can wipe their nose. Funny, but reality. I'm not sure. I think Napoleon came up with that. You know, because he's French. He wants to impress. You know, so you don't have a bunch of ragamuffins with all this snot on your sleeves, right? You know, like that. You know, so like that. Okay, so it's there. You know, but the point is it's always a, how can we get out rather than how to understand it and how to apply it, like that. Does that make sense? Because if you're always trying to get out of the cleanliness, how are you going to understand the various levels of subtlety of cleanliness? Right? Because there's the cleanliness, that's the physical, then there's the cleanliness of the mind. Right? Water in the kitchen, water in the bathroom, it's the same water. So technically it's the same purity. But if you take it from the kitchen, the mind will stay pure. You take it from the bathroom, the mind becomes contaminated. You understand? Mm-hmm. So these are the different things, these subtleties. So how do you even get into those things? Or you drink water without touching your mouth, but your hand is still not clean for puja. Because now that's prashad, so now your hand is prashad A, you can't touch any boga. But it's kind of like, why I have to wash my hand? You know? And everybody has the question, when I go into the toilet, why do I have to wash my feet? You know, as if, you know, so can you eat off the floor? If you can eat off the floor, you don't have to wash your feet. Anybody will eat off the floor? No, then wash your feet. Yeah. Or will you eat off the magic plastic shoes in the bathroom? No. So then you got to wash your feet. Simple. Yes. Does that make sense? So don't try to take this principle that Prabhupada changed. He didn't. He's just emphasizing. Whereas that they have the spiritual qualification of Brahman, so automatically you have the material qualification. It means you are qualified to do the puja. The difference is somebody who doesn't have a Brahminical nature to do puja won't be able to do it all day, every day. But he can do an artik here and there. He's qualified to do that. How often does any devotee, you know, general devotee, do a yajna? Right? If you have a temple, how often is there a yajna? Right? If there's an initiation ceremony or a marriage, that's, and how often do those happen? Right? Okay, if you're in London, then it happens regularly, but then they always have certain devotees who always do it. But if it's anywhere else, how often do they have them? No. So how many devotees in the movement have actually ever done a yajna? And even of those who have done it, how many have they done? Right? You know, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is it's not something that they do so regularly. So, you know, everybody does an artik, but how many do they do? It means we have some, how many thousand devotees here in Mayapur. How many are on a regular basis doing an artik? You know what I'm saying? So it's not happening. Gopal Krishna Maharaj comes here, every day he's doing an artik. You know, it's just the way he does. You go any temple he's in, he does the artik. It's just what he does. You know what I'm saying? So it's something he can just do on a regular basis. So unless that nature is there, they won't do it on a regular basis. But occasionally, everybody's qualified to do. But it's just they won't do it regularly. So the idea is, since puja is generally very serious and very elaborate, only those that have that nature will do it. Like everybody likes to like dress the deity or decorate the deity or offer the boga, offer the artik and all that. But who wants to sit down and get into fine points about, you know, about the difference between washing his, you know, about an achman washing his mouth, or it's washing the mouth after eating, or washing the mouth after taking bath, and that there's differences. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's freaky enough. You got a big other yidam achman, he's like this, but what achman is it? You know, why would you remember it? After your bath, you rinse your mouth before you leave the bath area, right? Before you put on the tilak, then you do achman with the achman cup and the spoon. After you eat, you're going to rinse your mouth. That's also achman. But then before you do something else, you're going to sit down and do the other achman. So all these little things drive you nuts. And that's one of them. Right? And then is it achman or is it punar achman? You know, or is it the gandusham because it's rinsing the mouth? Or is it hastamukha prakshalanam because it's after eating? It's all exactly the same thing, but it's all these different situations. So who's going to do that? Except for someone who has that brahminical conditioning. You know what I'm saying? Everyone loves to dress the deities. How many people are fighting to take out all the backdrops and put up the backdrops and sweep the floor and wipe the floor and go wash the rag and put it away properly and put the bucket back? I don't see any. But when it comes to dressing the deities, oh, it's a catfight. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's why then the brahminical thing, that's the concision. But it's not that they're not qualified as far as that they could do it, but as far as they continually do it. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Does that make sense? Yeah, like any lady, you have a little baby and they're cute and they're smiling, they can pick them up, deal with it like this. When they start crying and making a mess, then generally only someone who it's their own baby or someone who really likes babies. You know what I'm saying? Then they can deal with anybody. Does that make sense? Think about it. Where are all the little kids? You know what I'm saying? How many people can run a little nursery? Not very many. You know what I'm saying? So that's the same way, it's just with the puja. You know what I'm saying? Or cooking. Everybody can go in and kind of get something together, but who could cook as an occupation? Yes, so that's the whole point, is that you have both the spiritual and the conditioned. So the point is, since spiritual is higher than conditioned, automatically the qualification is here. So Vaishnava Das is only saying, because socially people are proud, and members of society who take pride in their social position do not condone to such activities. Because they're a Brahmin not because of the Vaishnava element, because we're the superior in society. So only because I'm superior, therefore I'll stick to the brahminical things. Right? Because it puts me in a superior position. So if I do lower things, my status drops. I don't want my status to drop. You know what I'm saying? But Vaishnavs, it's not a matter of of status. That's why Vaishnavas, you know, if they get, you know, off the rails, they don't mind doing any or all kinds of crazy stuff, because it's not a social thing. But Brahmins will be very careful. They may love to do it, but they won't do it because it'll ruin their social status. So therefore, for people working like that, then you also work in that and don't do those things, because they are proud of it and they are qualified. But if they're proud and not qualified, then we couldn't care less, because the point is the deity should be worshipped. Yes.
When you say Brahmana here, are we talking more smarta Brahmana? Because you don't necessarily, as a Brahmana.
Who's going to be proud of being a Brahmin?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It means Vaishnavas aren't going to be proud that they're Brahmins.
Yeah. Right? You can be a Brahmin.
Right. Gopal Bhatta is proud he's a Brahmin. Yeah, no. So then, you know, exactly. Raghunath Bhatta, you know, that they're the ones you don't hear about. Mm. They're the Brahmins. Mm. Yeah. Right? So, yeah.
What about this violating this social custom that he's mentioning here? That it can be raised as an argument that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and consequently also Srila Prabhupada, they can say that they also violated the social custom because they put the woman on the altar.
But which altar did they put them on? What is the kind of puja?
But they were criticized for them by those people.
Understand what we're dealing with here. Otherwise, then you think that they have a standing. Yeah. Did you catch what I mentioned about home worship and temple worship?
Yeah.
Okay, do you see any ladies on the altar here? No, because it's too technical. They want to dress the deity. They don't want to do all the technical stuff. Ladies aren't interested in the technical. They can do it for 3 years if they have no husband and they're really tough and all that. But after that, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So the technical, they don't. Everybody means the five things that Krishna likes. Nice food, nice ornaments, nice flowers, nice clothes. Like these, that everybody likes. The ladies love that. But all the little technical this and that. I mean, I took the guy who wrote, I was talking with one of the leaders in deity worship, in the movement. And I was explaining to him about the levels of the cleanliness and how in the full puja you have 7 points of water. And each one does a different level of cleanliness and that. He freaked out. I mean, literally just freaked that this is impossible to deal with. And I was just thinking, this is perfectly normal. You know, you go to any big temple in Saudi, they all have like that. You know, what's the big deal? But he freaked. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, that's temple worship. What we do in all our temples is home worship. So, therefore, if the ladies are involved, fine. Because what do? You go on the altar, you take the clothes off, you put the clothes back on. You know, or you go there, you make a plate, you pick up the stuff, wave it around, take it out.
Then the argument can be raised as, what about, okay, let's put this ladies aside, man who is qualified to do it, and he has tendency, but he's, according to social custom, not born in Brahmana family, he's not born in Brahmana society.
Yes, so what? But I'm saying, who's criticizing? What's the qualification of the pujaris nowadays? They're proud. But it's not that they have the standards. So that's what I said. We don't care about that. But if they're qualified, they're doing a first-class job, and they're proud of it, then we stay out of the way. Because the point is the first-class job's being done. The only reason that we as Malechas and Yavanas are doing all the puja and that, because there aren't Brahmins to do it. If they're there, why would we do it? You know what I'm saying? Because when we go on the altar, you know the amount of politics that's there? The ladies go on the altar and, you know, polish panchatattva once a year. The politics is so thick, you know, you need a chainsaw to cut it. You know? And it's just that short of the massacre. It's so this and that, who's in control and who's going to do what, and it's hell. So is that qualification? No. So, but we're doing it because there's no one else to do it. You know what I'm saying? Right? Ladies want to be in there, do the puja. And then after how many days is one of the guys in there married to one of them? All the pujaris that are married to ladies here in Mayapur are married to ladies who were in the pujari room. Just a fact. You understand? That's why you don't mix it. That's why the rules are there. But we as Mlechanavas couldn't care less. So therefore you have the combination between unqualified Brahmins, who therefore have dropped their standard, and overly proud Mlechas. So therefore then, you know, we do it and they complain. But, you know, when we're not fighting with them, we're complaining ourselves. Why should we be doing all these things? Can't we make it simpler? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't get more of a perfection than like in Japan, right? They have temples there. They're Shinto temples. They have a robot that does all the pujas. You come in, you select the puja you want, you put the money and all that, and the robot does it for you. Chants the mantras, does all the stuff, everything. Yeah, it's perfect. You're not going to get better than that. You know? No one has to worry about anything. You know? Then it's only a matter, well, you know, can I make the robot? You know? Yes, okay, great. You know? You know what I'm saying? So this idea of qualification, sentiment is the most important element. But still, the point is the sentiment must be there to please the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, it's just sentiment. So the idea is that by having these opportunities, the sentiment then is engaged in the Lord's service. So that's perfect. You know what I'm saying? So those moments that someone is absorbed in worshiping the deity, that's perfect. And then the moments when everybody's politicking with who and this and that. You know what I'm saying? Because look at it. When the politics and that, what are they politicking over? You know what I'm saying? Someone wants to be the temple president. Is anyone fighting to take out the garbage? You know, or drive to the market and buy the sabji? No, it's anything that's in a position of power, dealing with men or money or recognition. Nothing else. Nothing else. You know? Is anybody, you know, is there a big fight over, you know, sitting in the 24-hour kirtan? You know, go down to the, you know, the front gate, you know, the bhajan kutir. That's 24-hour. Who's there? You know? The local Bengalis. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's very selective what we fight over. You know what I'm saying? A bourgeois culture fights only over certain things. Bourgeois. You understand? Means the up and coming mercantile class. That's what the Western culture is. It's based off that. Right? They're the ones that make up all the trouble, right? Didn't work out for Louis XVI very well. You know, any of them. You know, England, it's all that group. A little brains, a little money, and then suddenly now they want to do everything. Does that make sense? So the point is you're dealing with unqualified people, therefore we don't have to apply this. But if there are qualified people, Prabhupada makes that statement, then we don't need to do it. We're only doing it because it's an emergency, because they're not. Where in India is the standard of we're worshipping being done? You understand? There's a few temples. You know, Nathdi, Tirupati, a few like that. But that's all, Govindaji. Like that. That they're actually sincerely, everybody's doing, everything's for the deity, everything's going on. You know, like, does that make sense? And the other ones, it's a business or this or that. There's a rule in Tamil Nadu, if a temple brings in their hundi more than a lakh or a lakh, then the government takes the temple over and puts in their own officers and controls money. Tirupati, it's all government officers. Pujaris are pujaris. But all the management is done by government officers. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense, but you know, whatever, you understand. So the point is there's very few temples, so therefore it's an emergency. Right?
So that's the main reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's in Puri, that, you know, they got an attitude about it, so we don't go in the temple. What's the big deal? You know, Jagannath comes out anyway. Does that make sense? So because that's there, then okay, we don't bother about it. You know what I'm saying? Because many times the things they talk about are standards of cleanliness and that, the devotees don't follow because they don't think it's important. So they are correct. We're not clean. We're not this and that. But we're pure from chanting the holy name. So technically on that level, then you're qualified. But as far as technically... Does that make sense? So the point is if it's an emergency, you can do anything. And devotees do have the qualification because of the spiritual. But as far as being regular and doing it with a pleasant environment, atmosphere, then, you know, it's a... what do you call it? That we may not have the qualification. So even though we do it, we disturb. Does that make sense? Right? But you have to be very, very careful with this thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura Prabhupada changed. They changed nothing. Like, if one thinks one changed, then one doesn't understand the philosophy. Right? You know, it's like, okay, here, the page is blowing away. Okay? I put this rock. Right? Next person comes along and puts this rock. Oh, he changed everything! You know, what's going on? How do we know what to do? This and that. And, you know, it's all changed. So what do we follow? What do we... The point is it holds the page down. It's supposed to be a rock. It doesn't say which rock. So that's how it works. You know what I'm saying? We say, oh, it changed, you know, Prabhupada's line, grihastas live in temples. Go to every temple in India. All there's living in them is grihastas. It's called a temple. That's why you call it a temple. If there's no ladies, it's called a mutt. So Gaudiya mutt. There's no ladies living in those places. So that's called a mutt. Right? And where there's a temple, that's where grihastas. Generally speaking, it's pujaris are grihastas. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada didn't change that. You know what I'm saying? He knows the essence, so he gets to the essence. There's no extra stuff. Right? He worked out the temple program over many, many years, seeing, you know, what the shastras recommend and what combination works for the devotees. Right? Until he established. And he said, because he said that, you know, if he had it to do it over again, he'd do it exactly the same way. So the only lack is our understanding of it. Does that make sense? Why is he not eligible? What will be his offense if he does? Vaishnav Das Babaji. If he violates social customs, one is guilty of Vyavaharika Dosh, secular impropriety, and members of society who take pride in the social position do not condone to such activity. So they'll become offensive to Vaishnavas. That is why one should not perform them, even if he is spiritually qualified. Footnote 3. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 4.1.1.16.132, it is stated, Sanatana Goswami had come to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri during the month of April, May. And during the month of May, June, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested him. In that month of May, June, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the garden of Yameshvara, Lord Shiva, and accepted prasadam there at the request of the devotees. At noon, when it was time for lunch, the Lord called for Sanatana Goswami, whose happiness increased because of the call. At noon, the sand on the beach was hot as fire, but Sanatana Goswami came by that path. Overwhelmed by joy at being called by the Lord, Sanatana Goswami did not feel that his feet were burning in the hot sand. Although the soles of his feet were blistered because of the heat, he nevertheless went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There he found that the Lord, having taken his lunch, was resting. Govinda gave Sanatana Goswami the plate with the remnants of Lord Chaitanya's food. After taking the prasadam, Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the Lord inquired, "By which path have you come?" Sanatana Goswami replied, I have come on the path along the beach. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, how did you come along the beach where the sand is so hot? Why didn't you come by the path in front of the Simhadwara gate? It is very cool. The hot sand must have blistered your soles. Now you cannot walk. How did you tolerate it? Sanatana Goswami replied, I did not feel much pain, nor did I know that there were blisters because of the heat. I have no right to pass by the Simhadwara, for the servants of Jagannath are always coming and going there. The servants are always coming and going without interval. If I touch them, I shall be ruined. Having heard all these details, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatly pleased, spoke as follows. My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. If one transgresses the law of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Who else but you could show this example? So even though he's the most qualified, it says even the demigods get purified by touching him. Right, and they are from high grade. It means that you don't get higher grade than Gaur Saraswat Brahmins of the Bharadwaj Shaka. Like that. You know, it's just don't get, you know. Is it maybe if it's in the Bhrigu line, that's the only thing that might trump that. But otherwise, it's that level. You just don't get better. So, on that material, but because they were associating with the Muslims, therefore they considered them socially in that position. So then they were very careful about it, because there's qualified people, they're doing all these things and everything. Right? Make sense? You know, they do nicely, all the different pujas and stuff like that. They have a problem with timing, but that's everywhere. You know, that takes good management. So we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur then, you know, arranged the timing was on time. But even now, you know, it gets off sometimes the noon offerings at night. You know, all kinds of things happen. So, you know, this is there, is that following that element of the etiquette. So it's not a matter of pride. You know, it's a matter of just that the etiquette's there. But if it has to be done, then one does. That's not the problem. Right? If no one else is going to do it, better it's done. Right? It's not that, no, but then it doesn't matter. No, it does matter. In that case, why cannot a chandala who's chanting Harinam perform yajna, fire sacrifice? Oh, no, we just read that one. Okay, now we're on this page. Okay, Chudamani, please tell me what is the cause of eligibility for karma and what is the cause of eligibility for bhakti, right? So now he's very clearly stated that he's not qualified for the one, he's qualified for the other. And because it's just the social, because of their pride and all that. So now it's like, okay, so then what's the qualification? Rather than fighting, how's the one and the other? Vaishnava Das Babaji. Nature, birth, and other such mundane causes that make one suitable for a particular type of work are the sources of eligibility for karma. So now he puts in here nature, because it's not just birth. See, the birth is that you're in that environment, so it's natural. Like, let's say the parents are doctors or some variety of intellectuals. It's very common that the child will also, you know, go into advanced education. Right? It's just natural. Because they're in that environment, they're dealing, they're from that nature. But you do have ones that don't. So the point is generally being born in that situation, that's the ideal for obtaining that situation. But it's not the final point. The actual nature is the real thing.
Yes. You would also take that birth because you have that nature? Or
yeah, you'd take that birth because you have that nature. But as we mentioned before, you may have the nature, but because of some other improper activity, you end up taking birth in a family that actually is different from your nature.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so like that. Right, you know, you hear of some born in a very poor family or very difficult family, and then, you know, they work their way up and they become very prominent because that's their nature. But somehow, by karma, they were born into that family.
Haridas Thakur.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's not an uncommon principle. But generally speaking, you see, is, you know, someone from this kind of family becomes like that. You know what I'm saying? Father's a fireman, you know, the son becomes a fireman. You know, it just goes like that. You know, father's a farmer, the son becomes a farmer. It's just natural because you grow up in it. You're associated with it. You have something common that is there, and by that association you naturally do. So that's there. But nature is still dead. And other such mundane causes, association. So it mentions what was your nature in your last life, whether the death rites were performed, right? What family you're born in this life, and what is the association. So birth is one of that, but it's only one quarter. Like that. So it is a consideration, but it's not the only consideration. So if you make it the sole consideration, you're trying to take something that's one quarter and move it up to 100%. That's wrong. But it is 25% because of association. Then it's the particular association you get, because you may be born in that family, but don't get association of that nature. Right? So if you're born in that family, you get that kind of association, then generally that gets fixed. Otherwise, if you get other association, it changes. Maybe born in a good family, you have bad association, you become bad. You're born in a bad family, you get good association, you become good. Right? How you take that is depending upon your last life, what nature you had then. But that being able to come through very cleanly, that's depending upon if the death rites were performed. That's why in the Vedic culture they get so bejiggity about death rites. Right? Like that. Because if those are performed, then all your good karma comes through. If not, it gets kind of muddled up. It's hard to get to. Does that make sense? You know, but for the devotees, then, you know, we have our, you know, give prasad, everything's hari ball. So it works. But for the karmis, then they're very elaborate, they have to do.
But not for a devotee or karmi. The association is very, very important.
The association is the most important. And because the point is, you're born in a family, you get that association. That's the whole point. That's why you connect it that way. You know? But it's just like, for the Pandavas, they didn't have a problem with Vidura as an authority. Right? But he's a Shudra. But they had problem with Karna as an authority. Right? They didn't say he was unqualified. Would they not fight with him? On the battlefield, would any of the Pandavas fight with him? Would they agree? Yeah? Yes. So they're accepting him as a Kshatriya. But in social dealings, they didn't. Why not? Because of that element, there's something not proper there. Therefore, there's a private program of a guru and his disciples. Right? That's been authorized and requested by the king for the citizens of the kingdom. Right? So, they're showing their prowess. Then at the end of this, some guy just walks in, which is an element of the Kshatriya prowess, but the point is the etiquette, it's not his program. He walks in, he insults the gurus that are there, he insults everyone that's there. That's not a Kshatriya. He may have that element of that direct Kshatriya chivalry, but there's something not proper there. So that's why they're not accepting it. But it's not that when Duryodhana crowned him as king of Anga, they didn't say, okay, he's not king of Anga. It's just they don't want to personally deal with him on the Kshatriya level because he doesn't behave properly. Right? You understand? So you can have these things overlaid at once. That's the problem. We said, no, it has to be this or that. Both can be happening at once. So one can be means devotionally qualified, but materially not very qualified. You know what I'm saying? He can do the puja, he can do all that, he's chanting all that, but he gets angry easy, or, you know, he forgets things, or he doesn't deal nicely with the devotees, or, you know, something. So it's not actually a qualification, but technically, because of the devotional service, these are the minor. You know what I'm saying? If you know the major stuff but don't know the minor, then it's okay. You know, you can fix the engine, take it apart, put it back together, but you can't change the tire. You know, no, okay, people will laugh, but they're not going to bother you. They're going to accept you as an authority on, you know, the engine. Does that make sense? You know, but it's just that was Chudamani's question. He can do all that, but why can't he do this? You know what I'm saying? Oh. Okay, Vaishnava Das Babaji. Nature, birth, and other such mundane causes that make one suitable for a particular type of work are the sources of eligibility for karma. Remember, that's the karma of it, not the devotion of it. That's the skill, right? It means if someone doesn't have the skill, you can send them to the best schools in the world, he'll never learn it. Like if someone doesn't have a musical skill, you can send them to Juilliard, you can send them to, you know, that school in Vienna, it doesn't matter, he will not become a musician. Does that make sense? But if he has the nature, then, you know, in his garage, then he'll figure out music. Right. The source of eligibility for bhakti is tattvika shraddha. The tattvika shraddha is pure-hearted faith in Bhagavan, which gives rise to a spontaneous attempt to attain him. Right? So you can appreciate the philosophy, you can appreciate Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord. Right? And what is Bhagavan as opposed to just he's God?
Yeah.
Some Mahajans have described tattvika shraddha as faith in shastras. So he has that. But actually the Vaishnava has more faith because he understands what it's actually for. Otherwise the others are following it for karma. And because if I follow it, I'll get the results. But if you say you chant Hare Krishna once and you're liberated, they won't have faith in that. Right? So they don't actually have that full faith. That's why it's a lower position. Right? Chudamani. Some persons have developed faith in the shastras, but lack a noble nature. Are they fit candidates for bhakti? Okay, now this is where we come in. Okay. Vaishnava Das Babaji. Shraddha is the only eligibility for bhakti. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20-27-30, it is stated, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories and by good association, and being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotees should remain happy and continue to hear, chant, and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though my devotee is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, he knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. Right, so this is 11th canto, so Krishna is getting technical here. Right? So this is the position where you have both can happen at once. So the difficulty will come is if we take it that it doesn't matter. Because we're devotees, we can do anything. Or, because he's doing something that's not noble, he's not a devotee. Right? Either of those, then, is a problem. Because then, in the one, is that then you're taking it the mundane karma is the cause of bhakti. So morality is supreme, not bhakti. Because then morality becomes the source of bhakti. Or the other one is that then that humility, that of that repentance for and knowledge that the sense gratification is wrong. See, here it's that you have the element that he may be engaged sometimes in sense gratification, but he knows that it's not actually beneficial or that it gets any results. Right? Does that make sense? But he's engaged. But we'll take the stand is that he's either never engaged in or he's totally absorbed in it. If he's never engaged in it, any engagement of the senses is all maya. And the other one, oh, we're just being practical and realistic, and so therefore it doesn't matter, and we're not fanatics. But as we notice here, Krishna is not saying either of those. They're both wrong. What he's saying is that he knows it's wrong. He's saying here, by good association, having awakened faith and narration of my glory, by good association, that means Vaishnava association is the main thing.
Hmm.
Right? And being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, right? But still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment because of habit. You've been doing this from time immemorial, you know it, but by habit it's going on. Does this make some sense?
Yes.
So there's this overlap between the two, because we say it has to be this or that, but that's duality. No, it can be this and that simultaneously. But it's not that because it's simultaneous, therefore it's okay. No, the sense gratification is not okay, but by habit it's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah? So, therefore, he sincerely repents of his activities, but sincerely repents means, okay, now what to do about it? We'll try again. Not that, I'm so useless, I'm so disgusting, I'm so fallen, I'm the most fine, this and that. No, it's just a matter, okay, this is not what you're supposed to do. It's not devotional service to Krishna. So how to make it in devotional service to Krishna? So you're repenting that it wasn't devotional service. The engagement of the senses isn't the problem. If it's done for Krishna, it's devotional service. Done for yourself, it's sense gratification. So it's not the engagement. You understand? The word lament, oh, I did this, oh, I did that, means, but I did. That's the important element. Right? And then we can taste the mode of ignorance. I can feel bad, I can, you know, wallow around, you know, in my misery. You know, but the point is then it's I did that, but you didn't do that. You took part as a assistant in the modes of nature. So the point is you're not supposed to be taking a part as an assistant. You're supposed to be taking part as an assistant in spiritual activities. But his point is you did that. No, you didn't do that. You were only an instrument. You're not supposed to do that. Why not? Because it's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
To sincerely repent such activity in the company of Buddha Association, Vaishnava Association, means automatically the person is feeling more enthusiastic about devotional service.
He's enthusiastic. But as we can see here, he has, by good knowledge, he has that faith and understanding that the material endeavor is useless.
Yes.
Right? So he's repenting that he's still involved in material endeavor. But he understands, and the reason he's repenting because he knows it's wrong, because it's not pleasing to Krishna. Not that it stands on its own, that it's morally wrong, and so therefore I'm a bad person. Does that make sense? Like that. So in other words, you can't drop into ignorance by thinking I'm the doer. Like, so therefore then the reaction is no, but we're taking part in something we shouldn't be taking part of.
This means that his realization is becoming deeper.
Yes.
And
yes.
Knowledge is developing.
Yes. Okay. Chudamani. What if I do not accept the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, here's the first time now he's kind of opposing. But he's still saying, what if I don't? He's not saying, I don't. He said, what if I don't? Because you're quoting Srimad Bhagavatam here and making all these really clear, exact points. But what if I don't accept that? Vaishnava Das Babaji. This is the conclusion of all the Shastras. Even if you do not accept the Bhagavatam, then the other scriptures will harass you with the same conclusion. Right? Because being a scholar and having studied all them, now has studied Bhagavatam, he can see the conclusion in those. So he'll be able to use that, like when we're going through the Mahaprabhu Siksha. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur exclusively used Vedic, you know, Upanishadic quotes to establish worship of Radha and Krishna, Bhava, Rasa, everything. Like that. Because all the scriptures will say that. It's just they're not. Bhagavatam has verse after verse after verse, while the others have one here and there. You know, because if, let's say, if Ayurveda was so much about the philosophy and how it connects to Krishna, then people go, well, what about medicine? I want to learn medicine, you know, like that. You know, just like devotees, they read Bhagavatam and says, okay, that's the theory. Okay, but what about the practical stuff?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But the point is, the practical stuff is there, but the emphasis is on how do you connect that practical to Krishna. Right? How to be a king for Krishna, how to be a husband for Krishna, you know, how to deal with the material world, you know, for Krishna, all those things. That's what Bhagavatam is showing. But devotees much of the time think that's theory, that's just philosophy. But why is it story? It's showing somebody how somebody practically did it. We do not need to refer to any shastras.
Many
shastras. You may simply consider what it is said in Bhagavad Gita, which is accepted by the adherents of all philosophical systems. In fact, even the verse quoted by you at the onset of this discussion contains the same valuable teachings. Just he didn't catch that that's what it was. Even if a person commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. Right? Because his determination to serve Krishna is proper. You make mistakes. Just like you have, the cook has the determination to cook the preparation properly. But he doesn't have the practice or the experience, so he may do it wrong. But then gradually figures out what's wrong. So if he laments and says, oh, I cooked it wrong, I'm so stupid, I'm so useless, I should never cook again, then how is it going to improve? He's a cook, right? So we're servants of Krishna. We're supposed to be serving Krishna. Not, oh, I won't serve Krishna because I'm so fallen. You know that doesn't make sense. You know, so the point is therefore, okay, then what to do to improve it? You know, the salt was wrong, or, you know, he put too much of this spice, or it was undercooked or overcooked, or like that. So then correct it until it becomes perfect. So that's the determination. That's why he's properly situated. He's determined to please Krishna and follow the order of Guru. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. So whatever is short, the shortfall in his character, right, or what's not noble, right, that will quickly become into position. O son of Kunti, but even if it doesn't, he's still saintly. Declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Prita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of low birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, and shudras, can attain the supreme destination. It is essential that you clearly understand the purport of the shloka. He quickly becomes righteous. Faithful people who have adopted the path of ananya bhakti, exclusive devotion, are quickly purified of all faults in their nature and behavior. You know, and quickly we have to remember is that one lifetime is quick, right? Because what we have a tendency is that if it didn't happen yesterday, it's too late. You know, it has to, like that. Because we're looking at it one lifetime. So therefore, it seems like a long time. But if we look at it, how long the soul's been in the material world, one lifetime is really quick. I mean, really quick. Does that make sense? Brahma went away for a moment, right? So that's an 11th of a second, and it was a year here. So 1 second would have been, for Brahma, would have been 11 years, you know? That's why it's dangerous to go up to Brahma's planet to ask him for a benediction for some material thing going on now here. Otherwise, like Rohini's father, then when you come back, it's a different yuga. You know, not just, you know, it's a different, okay, generation, you know, you mix in this, miss the X generation, and now it's in the Q generation, or whatever it is. But it's like, you know, you miss the yuga, you know, so. And it was at the end. So they were in Treta Yuga or Satya. And they came at the end of Dwapara. So, you know, that's why you have to be a little careful. So therefore, it's not much time. Right? And then Lord Brahma's 100 years, that's 3/4 of a second, you know, to Mahavishnu. That's just a breath in and breath out. That's it. A breath out and breath in. Okay. Dharma, okay. Faithful people have adopted the path of ananya bhakti, exclusive devotion, right? So that's ananya. Are quickly purified of all faults in their nature and behavior. Dharma follows bhakti because Bhagavan is the root of all dharma and he is easily conquered by bhakti. There is no need of any other method of sadhana. Dharma appears as soon as one becomes a bhakta and makes the bhakta's heart virtuous. The karmis and jnanis may fall down because of bad association, but bhaktas do not fall down because the influence of Bhagavan's presence saved them from bad association. The bhakta has the supreme destination in his grasp, whereas he takes birth, whether he takes birth in a sinful family or in a home of a brahmana. That is why Krishna promises, my bhakta will never perish. So here, even if he doesn't become perfect in this life, still, it's arranged that he has that association and all that. So maybe he's, engaging in sense gratification in a way that's not favorable, then he may take birth in a family that's not so qualified. But still, he'll get that association of devotees. He won't fall down. He won't go away. He won't end up in the animal species. Like that. Chunamani. I have come across instructions in the Gita and Bhagavatam about how bhakti is begotten from Shraddha. Kindly explain to me how the jiva may endeavor to possess that Shraddha. But notice now it's starting to change. It means because this is the advantage of using that method to inquire about what they're doing. One is it's when you see a weakness, then you can follow it and try to find to correct it or to remove it. Oh, but at the same time is if you find something valuable, then you can continue in the same way. Right? That way then people won't say, oh, you were soft, you weren't tough, No, because that's just the etiquette. That way then it can go either way. Like you see in this Prabhupada speaks out. The person says one thing, Prabhupada makes a comment, they say another comment, Prabhupada says something, and then it just goes for the rest of the article. And then now and again they ask, well, what about this and what about that? And goes the rest of the page. So that argumentativeness, takes up, basically, one paragraph. And then the rest of the page is all, Vaishnav Das Babaji, some people who are learned in the conclusions of the Shastras have explained that the word Shraddha means to have faith in the Vedas and in the words of Sri Guru. This meaning is not wrong, but it is not entirely clear. In our Sampradaya, the meaning of the word Shraddha is given as follows. Shraddha is the characteristic function of the heart that strives towards bhakti alone, which is totally devoid of karma and jnana, and which desires nothing other than the exclusive pleasure of Krishna. So that's Shraddha. Footnote 4. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 2262, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defines Shraddha as follows. Shraddha is confident, firm faith that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the discharge of devotional service. Because then you don't have to get involved in activities that are unnecessary. Right? In other words, if it's necessary for the daily activities, it's done. But one doesn't have to do out more than that. Right? Because otherwise then one may feel that, no, but if we don't do this, then this will be lost. If we don't do that, then that won't be gained. No, by doing devotional service, you get everything. Because going back to Godhead, now that's everything. And whatever there is in the material world, it's never going to satisfy. So it's still not. So just what one needs to deal with to be comfortable here so that one can perform the service, that much he deals with. More than that, he doesn't. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, firm faith and confidence are called Shraddha. When one engages in the Lord's devotional service, he is to be understood to have performed all his responsibilities in the material world. Right? Either he's done them and now come to that conclusion, by association devotees come to the conclusion. Or by associating with the devotees, he's come to that conclusion. Right? Either way, right, by sadhana siddha or kripa siddha, it doesn't matter, he's come to that conclusion. He has satisfied his forefathers, ordinary living entities, and demigods, and is free from all responsibility, right? Because if one's born, he has all these responsibilities. Such a person does not need to meet his responsibilities separately. It is automatically done. Fruit of activity karma is meant to satisfy the senses of the conditioned soul. However, when one awakens to Krishna consciousness, he does not have to work separately for pious activity. The best achievement of all fruit of activity is detachment from material life. The best achievement of all fruit of activity is detachment from material life. And this detachment is spontaneously enjoyed by the devotee firmly engaged in the Lord's service. So, in other words, fruit of activity, the best thing you can get from it is detachment from materialism. In other words, the best thing you can get from fruit of activity is detachment from fruit of activity. Right? That's actually what you want to get. So if you're performing fruit of activity, it's increasing your desire for it, then it's not actually going well. So that means you have to perform the fruit of activity without a desire for result. That will reduce that. That will give, that naishkarmi will give you liberation. But that's still temporary, right? Because we're looking at the nature of the soul. Even you merge into the Brahman, how long are you going to be there? You know, think about it. Anything you that is there that's a problem, if the problem is solved, how much do you remember the problem being solved? Right? It's really hot out. How long do you enjoy sitting in the cool room? Or it's cold out, how long do you enjoy sitting in front of the fire? Or you're starving, hungry, how long do you enjoy the eating? Or you're really tired, so how long do you enjoy the sleeping? You understand? It's limited. Right? So unless something reminds you of that unfortunate situation again, you don't think about it. Right? If it comes up, then you say, oh yeah, it's so good that we're like that. But if it doesn't come up, you don't think about it. So in the Brahman, there's not going to be anything from the material world coming up to remind you about it. So that means you're going to get bored really fast. Because if you're functioning, if you're in Brahman, you're functioning on that spiritual time frame or that spiritual experience. So even though it may be unlimited time here, it's very short there. Right? And since you're awake, not asleep, it's not like you had a good night's rest. You know, anything else, you see 5-10 minutes, and then you're done. Does that make sense? So if one lifetime of Brahma is a breath, 3/4 of a second, so then how many lifetimes of Brahma is 10 minutes? Or 5 minutes? So it seems you can. It seems like a huge amount of time, but in actuality, it's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we have to be very careful, is that it's temporary. So therefore, then even doing the activity Naishkarmya is not enough. It has to be done to please Krishna. Right? Then it actually removes the desire for, permanently removes the desire for fruit of activity. Right? Because the other one, just to do it as Naishkarmya, the fruit of, how would you do that unless you have those good material qualities to do that? So unless someone is materially highly qualified, how would he do that? Mm. Right? Not as a general lifestyle, maybe in one area. Mm. Okay, the guy is a real, you know, street, you know, gangster. But, you know, he's very nice to his mother. Yeah. Right? You know, and all ladies, he deals nicely. He won't tolerate anybody dealing badly with women. Right, but anything else, he'll blow your head off. You know, you look at him wrong. He doesn't mind. You know, does that make sense? So that's not a full lifestyle. It's a start, but it's not a lifestyle. So someone who has that means there's good quality. But even there's a good quality. Otherwise, how does that supersede everything else he does? Right. So there's some good quality there. So the point is to have that where one gives up fruit of activity means one has the good character to at all times be sense-controlled and knowledgeable about it, and therefore dutiful to do it in the platform of Naishkarmya. But by devotional service, you're doing it for Krishna, that's automatically obtained. So it naturally then pervades everything. Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to get. In other words, engaging the senses and the object of the senses are to lose that. Not that, oh, we're being practical and just, you know, making money and enjoying life. But then, so what's the purpose of it? Okay, you're making money so you can maintain your family. What's the purpose?
Enjoy the family.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but enjoy the family. Okay, you're enjoying the family. So is that the ultimate purpose? Yeah, so the point is, no, you're engaged in that to learn that this is not going to make you happy. Right? And that's why you want to do a good job of it, because otherwise you'll say, well, this family is a trouble, but if I had another family, then it would be better. Does that make sense?
Is it not also that some people have very bad experiences with family and from that get realization that way?
Yes, it gets realization as long as that pain is there. But as soon as the pain goes away,
then
the guy's there, live in the family, you know, it's been, you know, hell and this and that. And so, you know, he gives that up, he moves to Vrindavan, you know, he's there, but then 10 years later you see him riding in a rickshaw with, you know, some younger pleasant lady, because he figured out, well, she's not like my wife was. Mm-hmm. So therefore it is possible.
Mm-hmm. So not out of frustration.
But yeah, means you can use it as a position. Means mm-hmm. Narad Muni, this is a funny thing. In the seventh canto, then Narad Muni, when he explains Varnashram, then it means he's explained Varna. Then after that, he's explained duties of women, right? You know, how mana goes. He explains the overall, what men and women will follow. Then he shows, you know, the specifics of the women, their mentality, their needs, and this. Then after that, which you don't see in Manu, then he means not so directly. Then he goes on to explain how the malechas apply it. He says the malechas, by putting too much ghee on the fire, you know, you put a little ghee, it goes up. But you put a lot of ghee, it goes out. So he says then for the malechas, there's this moment where they get frustrated. So if they get the association of the Vaishnavas, then they could take up devotional service. Then they could practice. But you miss that point, then they'll figure out a new plan, and then, you know, you have to wait. You know, so it's not an ideal, because then once you take it up, frustration is there, but when the pain of that goes down, the tendency is then to get back into it. Does that make sense? You know, so the devotees are there, material life is tough and all this, and so this and that, and then, you know, when they're older, then they, you know, take it up and do it very nicely. Yeah. You know, it's supposed to be the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, it works better, right? It's much easier to be renounced at 50 than to changing diapers, you know, like that. You know, when you're 20, 30, diapers works, but when you're 50, 60, it doesn't work. Not if it's your kid. Grandkids, maybe, because then you don't have to do it. But if it's your kid, you have to do it. So, you know,
similar
it just
to the
doesn't.
RIT, you can do it.
Which?
The RIT, you can do it like once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, because it's not yours. Right? That's the nice thing about grandchildren. They're not yours. So, you know, you have the connection, you have the right, but they're not yours. No, you can't get better than that. Right? Okay. When the sadhaka regularly hears the instructions of sadhus in the association of shuddha bhaktas, a conviction arises in his heart that he cannot obtain his eternal welfare by the methods of karma, jnana, yoga, and so on. Right. So karma, jnana, and yoga cover all the Vedic options. So I guess and so on is, you know, outside that. So it doesn't even, it's just and so, yeah, you know, yeah, okay. And that he has no means of success unless he takes exclusive shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Hari. When this conviction appears, it may be understood that Shraddha has arisen in the sadhaka's heart. Shraddha is characterized by external symptoms known as Sharanagati, surrender to Sri Hari. Sharanagati is described as follows in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, 11.6.76. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of things favorable to the execution of devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian and master, full self-surrender and humility. Footnote 5. Okay, I don't think we're going to get into that. Okay, so then means one can see is that if Shraddha is there, that surrender is there. So if surrender is less, means the Shraddha is less. Right? So that's the point. It's the Shraddha that makes things move along very, very nicely. But as we see, it was saying that that is gained through the association, right? When the sadhaka regularly hears the instructions of sadhus in the association of shuddha bhaktas, a conviction arises in his heart that he cannot obtain his eternal welfare by the methods of karma, jnana, yoga, and so on, that he has no means of success unless he takes exclusive shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Hari. So that's how it happens. By association, hearing the instructions, he gets that faith that material life cannot give you anything, and only by full surrender to, or exclusive surrender to Krishna, can I be actually happy. Right? Yes.
Shuddha Bhakta means Madhyamadhikari.
Shuddha Bhakti means someone who's pure. And they may be neophyte, But the point is they have to be a pure neophyte. So it just has to be shrewd. So in other words, someone who has that kind of conviction. Right? You may have a neophyte pure devotee, though it's more rare. It just means they have that faith, but they don't have so much Shastric knowledge. Right? So that's there. You can't find that. You know, it means you say before Prabhupada said all my disciples are pure devotees, because at least at the time they were acting in that way. Like that. So whether they some were very good at Shastra, some weren't. Like, you know, New Vrindavan was examples that some Swami started to preach all kinds of weird stuff, and no one knew what to say except Satsarup, because he was the only one that acted, because he was an editor, so, you know, reading is something he does. So he had read Nectar Devotion, so he was the only one that argued with them. But the problem was, is he was just a Grihastha, and they were all the Swamis, so therefore, you know, like that. And so then, you know, basically then, you know, they you know, went, and then Satsarup had to preach. So then that's when Prabhupada started the morning program the way it is. So that all the things get in that way, so that everyone hears, one does all the different things like that. Because before that, it was just whatever was good for the preaching. So they stay up late, they get up by 7, I think, and then, you know, this, and then go out again. So they were supposed to, in their own time, read. So it's expected that way, then, just functioning on that Bhagavad program, everybody would be studying, would be preaching, would be associating, taking prasad, chanting, dancing, you know, like that. It was complete. Mm-hmm. Like that. But then he found that they weren't, so therefore then you regulated it, because it says, it means you surrender to Krishna, that's the best. If not, then you follow the rules of sadhana bhakti, so that's your pancharatra. So then he brought that aspect in. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.